everyone. Welcome to another off-season edition of Jay's Talk Show. Ali with you, and maybe we shouldn't be calling this the off-season anymore, as pitchers and catchers have reported spring training feels like it's arrived in earnest. So officially baseball season, which is very exciting. Since we are so close to actual baseball, that will bring with it Jay's Talk Classic episodes with your calls and your texts, which means we are probably winding down these off-season chats with people who are, you know, if we're being honest, I try to be honest on these shows, people who are far smarter than I. But when I do have a chat with someone who is far more knowledgeable and generally all around more pleasant than I am, I feel like it's a good idea to bring these chats to you. So as we are about a week away from spring training games in Dunedin, I had a chat with one of my favorite guests in MLB.com's Keegan Mathieson, who, as always, was very generous with his time. So here's Keegan and I chatting some Vladdy contract extension, the latest on Bobichet, and much more earlier on Friday afternoon. MLB.com's Keegan Mathieson joining us now live from Dunedin. And Keegan, given the amount of snow on the ground here in Toronto, I'm almost afraid to ask this, but what is the weather like down there?
You know what, Joe? I've got a bit of a twinge of a sunburn. I complained about the heat and humidity, not just today, but yesterday. I would say dozens of times. I note the entire city of Toronto holds their hand over their heart and sheds a tear for me, but it's beautiful down here. Normally it's a little cooler early on, but I feel like we're in the middle of March already.
Well, yeah, it sounds like a real tough gig. I'll say that. It does sound real tough. Apparently, I don't know if you knew this, apparently over the weekend, I should say, so it's tomorrow and Sunday, it's supposed to snow like 30 to 35 centimeters here in Toronto. So I think you're in the right place. Let me put it that way.
I think so. You know, when I'm up in Toronto in the off season, I tend to not leave the apartment or even couch all that often. So it's I'm in a good spot. I'm already up to back-to-back days going to work show. I'm very proud.
Well, I'm proud of you too. Well, and I appreciate you doing this for me. Thank you, man. It's always fun to catch up with you. I'm glad you're being your best Florida man self down there. Drink lots of water, maybe other things. Who knows? But hey, look, we've gotten the first few availabilities from John Schneider and Ross Atkins down in Florida yesterday. More of a general chat, as it usually is. And before we get into the nitty-gritty of anything else you've observed so far, I got to talk about the biggest issue currently facing the team, which, of course, is something we've talked about before, the contract status of one Vladimir Guerrero Jr. You know, I try not to read too much into Atkins saying things like, we'll never close the door, or if there is one, when talking about the path that's there or not there, because, you know what, like, that's just how he talks, right? I mean, they could be about to announce his signing, like, in 10 minutes, and I'm convinced he would say the same things. Where are you at these days on Vladdy's long-term status as a Blue Jay?
Yeah, so a lot of the messaging reminds me of the Shohei Ohtani pursuit, sorry, going back to when the Blue Jays decided, listen, we're going to be secretive. We are going to avoid talking about this in the media because it's not beneficiary to anything. And they stuck to that. And when this Blue Jays front office does decide on a message they're going to take with a player or a situation, they do stick to it. And that's totally fine. With Vladdy now, this is all we're going to talk about the next 3 or 4 days, because yeah, they've had an okay off season. They have an okay team. They have some talent in camp. Every one of those conversations has a but at the end of it. But what if Vladdy does not re-sign? Then suddenly you are looking at the next 2, 3, 7 years of this organization, and you don't really know what it's going to be built around. You're always going to be able to find depth players, role players. You're always going to be able to sign the guy for 15 or 20 million bucks a year, a Santander-like deal. But finding Vladdy is hard. A lot of organizations get stuck looking for a Vladdy for years and years. And yes, it's complicated. When you're talking about 400 plus million bucks, it's not a simple thing. I think a lot of what we're hearing now are factors that don't matter much. And what I mean by that, Joe, is that, yeah, Vladdy wants to be here. Yes, the Blue Jays want him because he's a damn good baseball player. Everybody wants this to work. That doesn't really matter. What matters is that they agree on a number. And getting to that number is the hard part. Finding that middle ground where the Blue Jays feel like they're okay, like they're not taking too big of a risk, and Vladdy feels like he's not leaving too much on the table, potentially a year from now. It's all about that number at this point. I don't think anything is going to happen in the next 5 minutes or the next day. When there's a deadline like this, it tends to go right to that deadline. What's your best? What's your final offer? And it's all about that number. And it's I keep coming back, show, to trying to simplify it, that the Blue Jays have shown that they're able to go pretty high when they are chasing a player they really like. Shohei Ohtani, Juan Soto being the other. There was a lot of money being talked about in both of those situations. Now, Vladdy is not Shohei. He is not Juan Soto. We all know this. But if you are talking going beyond 300 into the 400s of millions, they have shown that they're capable of doing that. And they have shown that the word budget also doesn't mean much. It's a pretty flexible word, I think, when the right player is available. And man, if you don't keep Vladdy around, you might spend a long time looking for another Vladdy.
I just can't help but think, I wonder when we talk about these discussions, that like, I wonder if how much opt-outs and deferrals are going to be a part of any of these conversations. And part of me kind of wonders if that is what's holding it up. I mean, less so the dollar figure and more just how much does the team want to lock him in for? How long does he want to be locked in for? Because you look at a lot of the free agents that have been signing massive deals, even Juan Soto to a certain extent. I mean, he has some opt-outs in his deal. And the opt-outs for Soto's deal are very creative, right? Like, they can void the opt-out by locking in Soto for a certain amount of time. I wonder if that part of the conversation is what's making this so complicated. Because, again, to use Soto as an example, there are very few players who become free agents at this young of an age who are this talented, right? So I just wonder if that's sometimes a part, or perhaps a part of it as well, Keegan.
Yeah, that has to be a big part of it. And we've seen the Blue Jays be comfortable with opt-outs, with Jose Barrios as an example. And we've seen them get weird with contracts as well. I know Chad Green is in a different stratosphere than Vladdy. It's not comparable, but that was an interesting contract how they structured it. They're open to these things. Deferrals with Santander, they're open to all of these things. And if you are talking, for the sake of round numbers, do not aggregate me, 10 years, $400 million. Let's use that as a round number. If that is offered to Vladdy and he doesn't like it, or the team doesn't like it going the other way, the easy way is to add or subtract years, add or subtract dollars. But if you're close, that's when you can start moving it around an inch at a time by adding an opt-out, by deferring some money, by putting in a clause, like you mentioned, Show, with Soto, where if he does try to opt out, then the team can add more money to keep him around. The higher the total gets, the more potential things like that can be done. And I think at this point I would be surprised. This isn't specific to Vladdy, but with any of these mega deals, I always expect there to be some sort of wrinkle involved in them. And that's a way that a team can give or a player can take in a deal. Anything they can do to get this closer is a good thing. And at the very least, I think the Jays have shown an openness to all of those ways you can do it. Some clubs prefer to stay away from options or prefer to stay away from deferrals. The Jays, at least a lower scale, have shown an openness to those.
We're chatting with Keegan Matheson, Blue Jays beat writer and reporter for MLB.com here on Sportsnet Today. Show Ali here with you until 5 Eastern. I was reading your piece on MLB.com itself, focusing on another young Blue Jay pillar, Keegan, and that is Bo Bichette. John Schneider, both actually yesterday and today, seems pretty bullish on his health, which I'm sure can only be viewed as a good thing after just a nightmare season for Bo last year. But I wonder, do you think we don't talk enough about Bo and his contract status? It almost feels like he has become the forgotten man, which seems strange to say considering how prolific a player he is.
It really is. Go back 1 year. 1 year ago today, Bo Bichette was one of the most reliable, predictable young players in all of baseball. He was a lock to hit right around 300 and a lock to have an OPS right around 810, maybe 20 home runs, steal a few bags. You could predict him so easily. And Vladdy was, is he just going to be a very good hitter? Is 2021 the outlier? Who is he? We're still trying to figure that out a bit. Whereas Bo, it was a narrower conversation. That's completely changed. Now, over those 3 years going into last year, so we're talking 2021, 22, and 23, Bo was worth an average of 4.5 wins each season, if you look at it by Fangraphs. That is an incredible baseball player. That is a guy who you build around. And show, I think it's, I have not done a good enough job sometimes, frankly, of trying to put my head back into those years. I can look at the numbers and recognize those, but there are multiple points in 2022 and 23 where I either thought myself or had conversations with people about Bo becoming a legitimate face of this franchise, either by himself or right alongside Vladdy. He's not the most vocal or the most expressive, and that's fine. He is not a stage performer. He's a baseball player. But when he speaks, he commands attention and people listen. He was emerging as that. This past year has just completely wiped that away for a lot of folks, and I absolutely understand that. Now, if Bo is hitting 350 through the first week, I think that's right back on, baby. I think that comes back really quickly because Bo Bichette's game is not subtle. It is aggressive. It's exciting. There's a lot of motion and movement to it. You notice when he is doing well. But a big reason that it's hard to wrangle these extension talks right now, show, is because I think this is a perfect example of when a team is going to point at one year and a player is going to point at the other years. It's real hard to find out what his value is. If he bounces back, maybe it's in that Willy Adames type value, the contract he just signed. But right now, I've got to be honest, I would not have a clue where to project a contract or what an offer would even look like at this point.
I just can't help but think that when it comes to shortstops generally, not just Bo specifically, but shortstops for the most part, because of their, like, the scarcity to a certain extent, and certainly, yeah. We've talked to you and I about Bo's defensive acumen, which I think has gotten better, frankly, but, I mean, even with that in mind, he's such a prolific offensive player that when you look at the totality of a person he is as an MLB asset to a certain extent, then those kinds of guys almost always test free agency, even if he were to come back. I just, like, generally speaking, I mean, whether it's Francisco Lindor or Dansby Swanson or like Xander Bogaerts or any of these, Trey Turner, any of these guys have more or less always gone to free agency, because I think the simple truth is you don't get very many players at the shortstop position who can do what these guys can do.
Somebody will overpay for a shortstop happily. And that's why I think that free agency can work in Bo Bichette's favor. Now, if you're Vladdy, and if you get to free agency just as a first baseman, now this is why I think he would be smart to play some third base this year if he can get those reps. But if you're Vladdy, for example, and you get to free agency as a strict first baseman, I don't know if that market would help in his favor. I think that seeing how the market values a first baseman would be pretty interesting at that point next winter. Whereas Bo, if he can bounce back, I think the market can only help him as a shortstop. Is he going to win a gold glove? No. But I have found myself talking about his defense a bit less over the years. And that's all you want. As long as he is OPSing 800-ish or over, you're fine with that. And free agency can be part of this process for everyone. I've used the Aaron Judge example too much and exhausted people by this point, I know, but I think it is a useful one with the Yankees a couple of years back where he went to free agency. He flirted around a little bit. He winked at the San Francisco Giants, and then he came back to New York. The market played its role in all of that. The market is almost like a team itself. You're talking to a few teams, and the market itself is helping shape all of this. They can always come back, but it's, man, it's a risky gamble because especially when you're talking about a shortstop or a star like Vladdy, somebody is going to make the emotional play and say, we need to get this guy. That has not always been the Blue Jays' way of business.
So we heard Ross Atkins yesterday, and I guess actually during the Max Scherzer presser as well, say that if the team was going to make more additions now, it would likely be via trade when it comes to position players. He did go on to say that he feels the rotation is pretty well set beyond depth. So when it comes to position players, i.e. bats, it does make it harder to forecast because, you know, you could really make fake trades for any player on earth. But I do wonder, I mean, when you look at the lineup as presently constructed, and I heard you even asking some of these questions to Schneider yesterday about the batting order, he went out and said it's pretty much all wide open. I think the only thing he really said of that was concrete, which I think makes sense, was having Vladdy and Santander bat next to or at least very near to each other, which, again, we kind of figured that when they signed Santander. But, I mean, do you think there are any more additions on the way? I mean, are the additions of Santander and Jimenez the biggest changes to this team going forward?
Likely the biggest, but I don't think they're enough if this lineup is really going to take a jump. It has the potential to hit for more power right now and be a bit better. Absolutely. Bo is going to be the biggest part of that, I think, if he can get back to who he is. Because then he either gives you a great option at number two, or he can be the unique leadoff guy who just blitzes the opposing starter, maybe. But going forward, Show, they still have on the infield, outside of Vladdy and Bo, you've got Ernie Clement, Leo Jimenez, Aurelvis Martinez, David Schneider can play in there, Will Wagner, Andres Jimenez, Addison Barger going down the list. That's a lot of players. And eventually you need to reallocate some level of depth to try to get someone who can raise the ceiling of this roster. Now, a couple of those players can do that by themselves. Maybe Aurelvis Martinez clicks and he hits 30 home runs. And we're talking in four months about, my goodness, we didn't see this coming. The Blue Jays had that bat all along. You never know. But I think the Jays have excess depth that would be valued elsewhere. Because if you are a team that's sitting near the middle of the league or the bottom of the league, you don't always want to wait for a 17-year-old to grow up and maybe be a good player. You would love to get back somebody who can play for you tomorrow and be part of this next wave right away. And on top of that, Show, I know the Blue Jays don't have a good farm system. I think everyone knows that at this point. They're not trying to trade for Mike Trout here. I think any level of trade they would be making for a bat or an offensive upgrade, you can still swing with the farm system they have quite easily. You might be taking a little more from the top than other organizations would have to, but if they want to go out and do that, it's sitting right there in front of them. And, man, big picture, if there is a time to be aggressive, it is Vladdy and Bo's potentially last year.
Yeah, I'm with you. Okay. Do I think, or pardon, let me rephrase this. Would I love to see Luis Robert Jr. as a Blue Jay? Sure. But do I think the Blue Jays have the prospects to pull off a Luis Robert Jr. trade? I'm not 100% sure they do, but do they have the prospects to pull off a Taylor Ward trade with the Angels? I think probably. That sounds pretty reasonable,
everybody
honestly.
Does.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's probably the level, if it's not Taylor Ward specifically, that's probably the level of trade we could likely expect. We did get some injury updates yesterday. Dalton Varsho on the mend, but I know you're down there and you've been seeing Varsho with your own two eyes. I'm curious what you've seen, because a lot of reports saying he looks pretty good. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean he'll be ready for opening day in about 5 to 6 weeks, but I wonder if the team is almost like intentionally underplaying the commentary for Varsho if, in fact, he is ahead of schedule.
Yeah, Varsho was the one where, Show, I had no clue what I would be seeing when I came down for spring training, and I won't try to sound smarter than I am. I did not know where he would be whatsoever, because that type of shoulder surgery for a position player, it's not all that common. We're normally talking about pitchers. So I did not know where he would be along his hitting progression at this point. And suddenly he's in there taking BP, hitting home runs in front of me. I was really surprised and pleasantly surprised, because that's great for him. Talked to him briefly. We were mostly talking about how terrible the Green Bay Packers were late this year, but nice. We did briefly talk about baseball. And he says he's feeling really good at this point. Now, obviously, he needs to work on throwing, which will strain that shoulder much more than hitting. And Dalton Varsho also loves to run into things at high speeds. So he's got to be able to brace himself and take some collisions with the wall as well and not damage it further. But he's further than I thought he'd be at this point. And he looks fantastic. He does look like he's added a bit of muscle. I know it's the time of the season where best shape and adding a new pitch and all this stuff never typically matters, but he looks like he's in great shape and is further along than I expected. And if he can be ready, even close to opening day. That's so important because if I've learned anything covering baseball, it is that when you are late in spring training, you're screwed. It is so hard to catch up while everyone else is already ahead of you as a hitter and a pitcher. Even if you're only losing a few weeks, it's so hard to make up that ground. So hitting will be a key part of that. Dalton Varsho can go out and field. He'll be able to play center field in the big leagues when he's 60. I don't care. But getting his timing ready, like he was taking live BP today, that's so important. Huge for him. We'll see where he's at in a couple of weeks, but I think this is a fantastic start.
Yeah, for a guy who maybe we thought would be out for a month into the season, if he's only out for a week or 2 weeks, that's definitely a good thing. But I suppose the bonus, if he is not ready, will be that they have, I'd say, maybe 3 to 4 guys who could capably very well play center field. I mean, Joey Loperfido, Jonathan Clase, I'm partial to Nathan Lucas, Miles Straw, I'm sure, would be a part of that solution if they needed to. I suppose if they wanted it, they could just put George Springer back there in center and get someone else to play right field. They have a few options. And speaking of one of those maybe younger options we have not heard a lot about overall, we have heard more about Alan Rodon in the last couple of days than I ever thought we would at this point. I mean, did that surprise you? I mean, you were in there talking to Ross yesterday, and he went out of his way to highlight the progress that Rodon had made as a minor leaguer. Like, we just so rarely hear him use the names of specific guys. It actually raised my eyebrows a bit.
That shocked me. I have been in 500 Ross Atkins scrums. Pretty much every time he has spoken since he came to Toronto, I've been there holding a microphone up in front of his face. And you eventually start to understand how people talk, what they lean on for a crutch answer, or what their speech patterns are, just how folks like to answer questions. That one really surprised me, because every spring we ask Ross Atkins about a prospect that he's looking forward to seeing, and he will do one of two things, show. He will say he's looking forward to seeing all of them and then talk quite broadly, or he will list every single prospect he can think of. And you get way deep down the list to the point where he is saying everyone I've got in the Blue Jays top 30. And I get it. That's a smart way to do it. You are not singling anyone out or leaving anyone out. When he said Alan Rodon, I love that answer. I've got to say, I really liked that he put a prospect on the spot right there. He's not adding pressure that this young man cannot handle. He is not making Alan Rodon's life any worse or any tougher. I really liked that Ross Atkins did that. Now, Rodon is beloved throughout this organization. Everyone likes this kid. Everyone talks about the exact same things, that he is very smart, he's engaging, he understands the game, and he's a very Blue Jays style of hitter. He's that Spencer Horwitz, Will Wagner-ish high on base hitter who might only hit in that 15 home run range, but this is what the Blue Jays like. And they've really developed one in Rodon. This organization has not developed a starting outfielder in 100 years. It's been a while. Internally developed him. And it gets especially interesting to me, show, when we look a little further down the line. And Rodon is unlikely for an opening day unless there's an injury. But further down the line this year, this team needs a leadoff man long term. Will Wagner is another option. Bo could be an option this year on top of Springer. But Alan Rodon is a pretty interesting one. He just lives to get on base. He loves to get on base, and he understands what it takes to do that. And he will get pitched differently in the big leagues, absolutely. But I think he's smart enough to understand how to adjust to that. And we are going to see a ton of him in spring training. Because guys like George Springer and Santander, they don't need to be in there every single day. I think you are going to see Rodon as much as any prospect. Every spring has its darling, and it is Alan Rodon's turn, 100%.
Keegan, before I let you go, and as always, you've been generous with your time for me, I do need to get a thought from you on your book, The Franchise, Toronto Blue Jays, coming out in June. Now, the last time we spoke, we spoke about some of the stories you can find in there. I think the last time we talked about the details on the Shohei Ohtani visit to Dunedin. So I'm looking forward to reading that, certainly, and getting mad all over again. There'll be a foreword from Gibby. John Gibbons doing some writing for you. Like, what? Without spoiling too much, like, what else can we expect when the book is released later this summer?
Well, Gibby's forward has to be the highlight. Initially, he told me to just write it myself and to make him sound smart. I eventually convinced Gibby to put pen to paper and write a story for him. But I'm excited about this show. It allowed me to kind of go through the history of the team, but be picky at the same time and tell some stories that I really wanted to about players' lives, about some of the players and people and moments that have mattered to this organization. And it was refreshing, too, because a lot of the time, spring training's an outlier, but my job a lot of the time is asking a guy why his cutter sucked or why he struck out three times.
Right.
This book was a really great opportunity to speak with some folks about the best days of their lives, about happy memories, about things that meant a lot to them. And not only players, but broadcasters as well. Our friends Dan Shulman and Buck Martinez, both a chapter on each of them. Writing Buck's chapter was honestly one of the great joys of my career. That man has more stories than I know words. My God, it's amazing. But I'm excited for folks to read it on June 3rd. And the initial reaction has been overwhelming. They had me being an emotional man yesterday, show, I tell you.
Well, I'm not just saying this because we've known each other for a while, but I did pre-order the book when the link went up. So if nothing else, you can count on at least one sale.
That is above projections. The sports books in Canada had me at over under 0.5.
There you go.
We've already cashed, baby. I love it.
We've cashed. And hey, always cash when we get to chat with you. It's always money, Keegan. You're the man. Thank you so much. Again, best of luck being the best version of your Florida self down there. And hopefully we can chat soon.
You got it, buddy. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks again to Keegan for joining. He very well might be the best Jays guest that we get on the network. And I know I'm biased because we're friends, but honestly, like short of Dan Shulman himself, Keegan's the best, right? And again, I'm making no secret that we're pals, but he is always willing to spare some time for me, so I do really appreciate it. As always, though, the people I appreciate the most are you for listening and tuning in to Jays Talk. This was, by my count, the 8th off-season episode, but like I said earlier, when we get back to the games themselves, the first of which will be Jays-Yankees at TD Ballpark on Saturday, February 22nd, you will finally get to have your say once more on Jays Talk with Roger Lajoie. I'll be back the following weekend. Let's cross our fingers and hope that either Raj or myself will be talking an extension for Vladimir Guerrero Jr., maybe Blair, maybe Blake, maybe Barker as well. But until then, I'm Sho Ali. You've been listening to Jays Talk. Thanks for listening on the Sportsnet Radio Network.